Greetings, greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. It is the Weekly Worldview. I am your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back to the show where we don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors. We don't have panels. No panels. But we do help focus you on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. That, yes, no panels. So I sit down today before the microphone with, I believe, fewer news items than I have ever had in hand going into an hour of broadcast, and it's because there's not much interesting in the news to me. Have you heard the giant sucking sound? That giant sucking sound is all the real news in the world being sucked out of the room by the presidential campaign. And the incessant coverage by every branch of the media. I know there's real news out there, but you just can't find it because of coverage of the Trump and the Clinton and the Clinton Trump and the Kane and the whoever the other guy is I never heard of. You try to watch the news, and unless you watch the local news, you're not going to get anything but the presidential election. And it's driving me crazy. It's so hard to find real news. Instead, I've got some host who's an idiot child with a panel of three or sometimes as many as six people I never heard of. People who, as far as I know, are just publicly educated morons, and they're going to talk for 8 to 12-minute segments about Clinton versus Trump. Why am I going to watch this? Is anybody watching this? Well, this is what's scary, is that apparently people are watching it. And so all the cable news networks and the Sunday shows and Trump, Clinton, Clinton, Trump, what do you think? What do you think? What's your prediction? What are the polls? Well, I think, who can watch that? I can't watch it. And the internet is just as much overwhelmed with fake news about the election. There's not going to be any real news in the election unless, I don't know, if Hillary Clinton falls down a flight of stairs, that would be news. If Donald Trump abdicates and appoints his daughter Ivanka in his place, that would be news. Otherwise, could you please shut up about it until November? I can't take it anymore. Yeah, I know. Well, you know what made me think of that? He said to his extremely attractive audio engineer, who has joined me in the studio, by the way. She's reading the newspaper. Anything to avoid having to focus on. What's going on here? Well, I've been talking about Trump or Clinton for 3.5 minutes. She's probably ready to leave the room. But you know what made me think of Donald Trump abdicating? I thought about the Brexit, and which I hate that word. The United Kingdom's exit from the EU. Did anybody else notice that all the men who led the campaign abandoned the ship after victory and left it in the hands of a woman named May, who I never heard of? Has anybody noticed that except me? I think it's a sign of the status of Western civilization and manliness in general, that when the leaders won, they all ran for cover, and a woman ended up having to take up governance. I think that's a fine symbol of England in particular, Western civilization, and the overall status of manliness in the Western world. There's just not much left. That's all. All right. So, where to start? With so little news, I don't want to talk about it. Did anybody see the... I didn't read the story, but I saw that there was a Snoop Youth Festival. Snoop Youth. That's a Snoop Doggy Dog. If you listen to the broadcast regularly, you know that out here in Colorado, that Snoop Doggy Dog had launched a youth football league called Snoop Youth. And then it collapsed in bankruptcy, and all the stoners couldn't keep things organized, and there were upset parents, hapless parents upset about the fact that their kids showed up for Snoop U football, and there was nobody around. Well, there was a concert, apparently Snoop Doggy Dogg, in addition to his philanthropic efforts in the Snoop U Football League, he also still entertains with some sort of rap music type thing. And there was a concert somewhere in America. I didn't even click on it, but I did see the video, and it was, it was pretty intense. It was a wave of people collapsing toward the Snoop stage there. A wave of Snoop youth as the railing collapsed. And the fortunate thing, folks, is that most of the people were already under some form of sedation. And so there were very few injuries. And we certainly hope no one was hurt seriously. So that you got that, right? And let's see. Let's go to Russ, a listener from Wasilla, Alaska. Of the torrent of thousands of emails we receive here at the Weekly Worldview every week, very few make it to air. But Russ is one of our regulars, and he was a bit upset with me over a statement I made last week on the broadcast. Mr. Russ in Wasilla, Alaska is upset about my claim that there are no aliens and that aliens are simply going to be used as a cover for the collapsing Big Bang and Darwinian evolutionary theories. In no particular order, the collapse shall occur. But they'll be ready with the aliens. And Russ writes, Doug, no aliens? Oh yeah, buddy? How many times have you been abducted? You may laugh, but try living up here in Alaska. I mean, it's so bad I can't get any sleep, Doug. It's like 3 or 4 times a week I find myself in some weird room, getting implants in my brain, but the aliens are somehow hiding it from my doctor. And he keeps telling me that I'm actually suffering from a condition that he calls Dane Bramage, or something like that. But I will give you one thing. Last week, Doug, you were right about how silly it is to say that Denver International Airport was built to incarcerate Christians. Anybody with half a brain, like myself, as I've made clear here, knows full well that the labyrinthian structures under DIA are where the CIA moved the aliens from Area 51. And there is a website that proves all of this, and I would give you a link here, except I haven't finished creating it. Please stand by. There we go. That's Russ in Wasilla, Alaska. And we're glad that we are Russ's lifeline to sanity and the outside world. And we appreciate his contributions to the broadcast. Mr. Russ, we're going to be sending him some medication and a counselor because we love Russ. All right, now let's see. Carl Gallup is an alleged pastor. What was his headline? Let's see, last week the headline was from Franklin Graham talking about prison camps if we don't vote for Donald Trump. This week, Carl Gallup's his article was linked to on several online publications, asking if we can live with ourselves if we contribute to the election of Hillary Clinton by not voting for... I don't want to talk about the election. All right, just put that aside. I may get back to it. I may not, because I'm just sick of it. Let's talk about Texas shale in our economics file this week. 20 months, this is according to the Telegraph in London. Apparently all the real reporters left are in the UK, and they're over the age of 70. And the folks at the Telegraph write that 20 months after Saudi Arabia took the fateful decision to flood the world's markets with oil, it has failed to break the back of the U.S. shale oil industry. Yes, I predicted that the Saudis and the Russians, they were picking a fight with some really tough people up there in North Dakota, out there in West Texas. And let's see, apparently the Saudi-led OPEC Gulf states that while they have succeeded in killing off a string of global mega projects in deep waters, North America's frackers are cutting costs so fast that most can now produce at prices far below levels needed to fund the Saudi welfare state. That's right. The Saudis, their entire economy depends on buying off the people whom they subjugate under Sharia law and brutalize. And so they have to buy them off with basically what comes down to bribes. Let's see here. The Permian Basin in West Texas, where I spent a good portion of my youth, by the way, growing up, a good portion of my youth, before Snoop Doggy Dogg had ever hit the scene, all of us youth out there in the Permian Basin, by the way, the Permian Basin has been scientifically proven to most resemble the surface of the moon of any land structure on the planet. In fact, I remember we moved to West Texas from southwestern New York State in the mid-1970s. And if you've ever been to southwestern New York, I grew up around Buffalo when I was a small child, but out in the country, about 60 miles south of Buffalo, New York. And it is an idyllic and beautiful place, except for the 7.5 months of winter. If you can get through the 7.5 months of winter, that the rest of the year, it's just idyllic and beautiful and green and lush. And there's rivers, and every deciduous tree known to man is represented in about every 5-square-mile area of southwestern New York. Beautiful in the fall. So just a beautiful, idyllic place to be a child. But the socialists destroyed the state of New York in the early to mid-1970s. And it was very difficult for a welder, pipe fitter type fellow like my dad was to find work. And so we fled to West Texas. We fled. I mean, you don't go to West Texas unless you're leaving a pretty bad situation, okay? I mean, it's like fleeing into Syria from somewhere. It's rough, okay? So one of the memories that is etched in my mind for all time is the view as we came over a rise, as we were approaching, we drove from West Valley, New York, down to a town called McCamey, Texas. This is circa 1977, I believe. And as we came up over a rise on the 2-lane highway, having not seen another human being for 30 or 40 miles, nothing but scrub desert, mesquite, and cactus. And we came over a rise, and I remember my father saying, "There it is. There's McCamey." And I saw all the color drain out of my mother's face as she realized, this is where we have to flee to. This is it. From my idyllic paradise in southwestern New York and the lush green forests of Erie County to the surface of the moon in West Texas. But the thing is about West Texas is that living in such a brutal, harsh environment creates a very tough people. And the Permian Basin, they say in this article as we return to the news, is as bountiful as the giant Ghawar field in Saudi Arabia and can expand from 2 million to 5 million barrels a day, even if the price of oil never rises above $55 a barrel. Quite to the chagrin of the Saudi child molesters and princes who run that Sharia paradise. And the Russians. So apparently these Texas frackers are a lot tougher than the Saudis had bargained for. And they've managed to cut costs at an astonishing rate. And now they're doing something called multi-pad drilling. I had never heard of this. I find this fascinating. Multi-pad drilling means that 3 wells are now routinely drilled from the same rig, and sometimes 6 or more wells are drilled from the same rig. An average well productivity has risen fivefold from the Permian in just the last 4 years. So the author at the Telegraph, a 70-year-old journalist who still knows how to report on real news, writes that OPEC may now have to break for a OPEC may now have to brace for a longer war of attrition than they ever imagined. Global inventories of oil, of crude oil, remain near all-time highs, and record volumes are being stored on tankers offshore. This sets the stage. Oh, wait a second. One driller in West Texas, he claims that his pre-tax production costs in the Permian Basin of West Texas have fallen to $2.25 a barrel. Now, I find that hard to believe. This guy is, he's probably exaggerating. Let's say he's exaggerating by three times. That means his costs are actually $6.75 a barrel. Well, let's see the Saudis compete with that, or the Russians for that matter. Global inventories. Let's see, this sets the stage for an oil shortage and a price spike later this decade. And whether OPEC can survive that long is an open question. Most of the cartel needs oil prices near $100 a barrel in order to fund their Sharia paradise regimes. So if West Texas, according to the Telegraph, if West Texas can boost output by another 3 million barrels a day at anywhere near $55 a barrel, the Saudis may have to dig in for a very long and painful siege. And it just couldn't happen to a nicer bunch of fellows. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Come on back. Come on back to me now, he said, as his extremely attractive audio engineer was just way, way too into that particular bump. I will leave it to the audience to figure out the connection, because it's extremely esoteric. You'd have to be on the inside of the inside inner circle to get that. But let's go instead to a story that I have to report the story because of what this young man is saying. It's important. But I also have to comment on the way he says it. He is NFL star Ben Watson.
I don't know. Don't ask me.
Never heard of him. You know why? It's because we're not into the NFL anymore. Some of my friends think that I have a pathological a problem with the Denver Broncos, because the thing is, they were all upset with the Broncos and how they shafted Tim Tebow. But slowly but surely, they've all gotten back into the Broncos have slowly creeped their way back into the good graces of many of my friends. Some of them have such a severe case of bronchitis that they're actually willing to watch a Broncos football game with their family and children, which I find shameful and detestable. Some of my friends even want to talk about Denver Broncos rumors and training camp, which I find detestable. So, unfortunately, because I'm just not into football anymore, young Mr. Ben Watson has escaped my purview. I'm just not paying attention to the National Football League anymore because I am sincere in my deep-seated hatred of the Denver Broncos. So I'll give you an example of how sincere I am. I had a listener to The Worldview who got in touch with the show through other sources and said he was coming to town. He wanted to meet me and my pastor, Bob Enyart. We do a show together. This fellow found my Pastor Bob show, which has been on the air for 25 years, through my show, which has never been on the radio and has only been on the internet for 5 or 6 minutes. And so it was a really neat situation, and he suggested we should go to Shanahan's, where he would treat us to a steak dinner. Now, who's going to turn down a steak dinner, right? So anyway, I was thrilled and honored that someone who's listening to the show would want to buy me a steak. But I crafted an email very carefully to this listener, suggesting that perhaps if he was going to drop that kind of money on a piece of beef in the Denver metro area, perhaps it would be best to avoid a restaurant that is even tangentially associated with the hated Denver Broncos, Shanahan's having been founded by former Denver Broncos coach Mike Shanahan. And I suggested that perhaps he should go to a place like, say, Del Frisco's, Double Eagle Steakhouse across the street, and avoid the association with such a group of ne'er-do-wells as the Denver Broncos. Even a tangential association should be avoided at all costs. So anyway, he flew into town yesterday, and he took Pastor Bob out to dinner. At Del Frisco's, by the way. They said it was fabulous. I could not make it because it was the Bird Whisperer's 15th birthday, and we had festivities here. And so I ended up going to lunch with my listener, one of my 17.5 million listeners. Or is it billion? 17.5 it was?
No, 17.
Straight up 17. I thought we had not figured if it was the millions or billions because the algorithm hadn't been perfected yet, but perhaps it was 17. But that's beside the point. Instead, we went to a sandwich shop that used to be good, but boy, was it dreadful.
Yeah.
It was a dry sandwich with easily one-third the meat that was in that sandwich a year ago. And I was embarrassed that I suggested that my listener go to the sandwich shop, and I want to make a public apology right here, right now. I am sorry. I am sorry. Todd from Tampa, I apologize. But was it Big Bertha's ain't what it used to be? No, it's large Marge's. It used to be a decent Philly cheesesteak, but boy, have they gone downhill. Man, that was horrible. I'm glad there was good conversation. Maybe he didn't notice how lousy the food was. I hope not. So how did I get off on that? Oh, we're talking about the hated Denver Broncos. And so I don't know Ben Watson, but he's a Christian football player, and he plays for an NFL team, and I don't know what team. But he did an interview with a San Diego-based Turning Point Pregnancy Resource Center. This is an alternative pregnancy center. This is where young women who are pregnant and who find themselves in a bad situation, they can go and they can experience the love of Christian people who want to help her. And she doesn't have to kill her baby. So it is an alternative to Planned Parenthood, where you can go and experience the hatred and the vicious, cutting cruelty of the world and have people force you to pay them in cash to kill your baby. Well, NFL player Benjamin Watson sat down for an interview with Turning Point Pregnancy Resource Center's blog. And he was asked whether he thinks race plays into the abortion debate. And he pointed out, and I'll go ahead and quote the young man, because he's well-spoken. He pointed out that the abortion agenda seems to be primarily focused on minorities, and how the nation's, well, let me just quote him. He says, quote, The whole idea with Planned Parenthood and Margaret Sanger in the past was to exterminate blacks. And it's kind of ironic that it's working, said Ben Watson, NFL star. He said, it seems to be something that is really pushed on minorities. In the public, it seems to be painted that when minorities get pregnant, they need to get an abortion. When black girls are pregnant, it's like a statistic. But when white girls get pregnant, they get a TV show. Ooh, that's pretty cutting. He says, we talk about advancing the black agenda, about our interests, about what's important to us, and then we are turning around and we are killing our children. And we're buying into the lie that it's our personal decision to make. He says, honestly, I am sympathetic. I don't know exactly what it's like to be pregnant and to not want the child. So I always want to be sympathetic to that. So the young man, he speaks the truth. This was published on the Christian Post, by the way. And the Christian Post notes that Planned Parenthood was founded by Margaret Sanger, who has often been accused of being a racist and a eugenicist. Often been accused? I'm wondering if the journalist at the Christian Post has ever just read her book. Nobody has to accuse her of being a racist and a eugenicist. Just read her book. She says it herself. It's not really up for debate. But this highlights a problem with the younger generation that I've been noticing more and more and was pointed out to me at first by my extremely attractive audio engineer, is that when you talk to younger people under 30 particularly, they can never make an equivocal statement of fact about anything. It's as if they've been trained to never make a statement of fact with any confidence whatsoever. And half the young people you talk to, virtually every statement they make, ends with that lilting, questioning lilt in their voice. Like, the one thing I'm sure about is that I'm against abortion. We know that life begins at conception. They just can't seem to just state a fact with confidence. And I think it's because they've been raised and reared in an entire milieu of moral relativism for so long, mostly in the public schools. There's so much moral relativism that nobody's sure they're right about anything anymore. And even so, the author, the reporter at the Christian Post, he can't say Margaret Sanger is a racist and eugenicist because he's just not comfortable with that. So he says she's often been accused of being a racist and a eugenicist, where anyone who read her book knows that you can state it because she stated it in her book, in her own words. But the youngsters are not comfortable with facts, and they lack confidence. And even Mr. Benjamin Watson, who I respect and I appreciate his point of view, when he makes his statement about the fact that Planned Parenthood is butchering generation after generation of black children, he says, with Planned Parenthood, Margaret Sanger, in the past, Planned Parenthood was used to exterminate blacks. And it's kind of ironic that it's working. Well, it's not in the past, number one. They were butchering black children yesterday at Planned Parenthood. They'll be butchering them next week. And I don't find it kind of ironic that it's working. I find it, it makes me angry that it's working, but it is working. And I'm glad that Mr. Watson stated that it is working. But he says abortion, he says, it seems to be something that's really pushed on minorities. Well, no, it doesn't seem to be. It is. You just said it is. How come you have to say it seems to be? He says, in the public, it seems to be painted that when minorities get pregnant, they need to get abortions. Well, it doesn't seem to be, Mr. Watson. Have some confidence. You are correct in what you're saying. It is the fact that when minorities get pregnant, the entire culture insists that the best thing for them to do is to kill their baby. All right, so I'll leave Mr. Watson alone. It just it highlights I am a man of words and letters, and I appreciate the importance of not only what you say but how you say it. And I've noticed that the younger generation simply they just can't seem to stand up and confidently announce a fact with a sense of assurance. And the problem there is, folks, is that the entire world is looking for leadership. And when you're looking for leadership, you want someone with confidence, someone who not only is right but knows they're right and is willing to stand up and state the facts. And when you look around and you can't find someone like that, well, that's when you lose your civilization, and that's when things collapse into confusion and chaos. And that's when you end up with a naked charlatan like Donald Trump, who might be the next president of the United States. That's why everybody wants a piece of the action. Everybody needs a main attraction. Yeah, what everybody needs. Satisfaction guarantees. Everybody wants a piece of the action. I am your host, Doug McBurney. So glad to have you aboard. As we romp through the news of the week, avoiding at all costs any panels discussing. I flip through the channels in the evening as I and my extremely attractive audio engineer just try to get some news of the day. And we see these panels. And if David Gergen's on the panel, we stop for less than 1 second. Because the sight of David Gergen, I could have some sort of a conniption or a fit if I actually hear David Gergen's voice. Who's the other one?
There's so many.
The transvestite Republican with the Adam's apple. What's her name?
Ann Coulter.
Less than can't stop for more than a 300 milliseconds. Ann Coulter cannot hear her voice. And, well, the list goes on, but we try to forget these people, so I don't really remember them all by name. But those are the two most offensive. And then everyone else I don't even recognize. They look like they just got out of college, and I'm supposed to listen to them tell me about politics? I mean, are people actually watching this? You know what it is? It's possible that older Americans appreciate watching young, stupid people talk about the elections so that they feel smart. Maybe. I cannot understand the attraction and how these cable channels could be getting any ratings and how Sean Hannity's show could be getting any ratings. He just has guest after guest after guest who just regurgitates the same bilge about the same rumor in the same poll. It's unbelievable. It's almost as if there's a conspiracy to keep the real news out of the news. All right. And on that, I can't do that story. I can't do that. No, I can do this. In fact, I'll just go with the stories in the order I had them. Because there are so very few of them, I shouldn't have a problem. Millennials don't want to have sex. Younger millennials born in the 90s are more than twice as likely to be sexually inactive in their earlier in their early 20s as the previous generation. Overall, millennials, this is according to a Washington Post story talking about a study published last week in the journal Archives of Sexual Behavior. They say millennials, people born between the early 1980s and 2000, they just don't want to have, they don't want to have sex. They're not interested in sex anymore. Experts are concerned that the drop-off reflects the difficulty some young people are having forming deep romantic connections. And then they go on with some statistics. I'll post this, but here's the thing, folks. Well, we don't want young unmarried people having sex, but this trend is a signal. There's a bigger problem. We now have the millennial generation who was raised in an environment of moral relativism, in which sex was relegated to something that you just did for fun, usually when you were on ecstasy, after a rave or at a rave. And they're waking up to find out that that's not working. That's not working. According to the researchers, many young people speak disparagingly of the messy emotional state that love and lust can engender, referring to it as, quote, catching feelings, as if one were catching the flu, catching feelings. One young man says he opts for pornography instead. He says it's quicker, it's more accessible. What you see is what you get. He was asked if he was curious about actual sex. He said, not really. I've seen so much of it. There really isn't anything magical about it, right? This is what a young man says. So they've also been raised, this is the first generation to be raised in an environment of instant access, realistic pornography 24/7. And this is going to cause, well, it's causing, we can see it. It's going to cause a generation to now become disconnected from the idea of not just sex, but the idea of love. The idea of an intimate relationship with another human being. The idea of marriage and procreation. It's very hard for that ideal to compete with easy access to pornography, moral relativism, and the idea that you evolved from nothing and you're going to nothing. So what's the point? And that's what I see reflected in this study that tells us that young people just don't want to form deep romantic connections, and they don't even care about sex that much anymore. They've been saturated by it. And it's a sad feature of our modern technologically advanced society, and the fact that our governing officials and the leaders of our churches have decided to allow pornography to be as ubiquitous as, well, probably more ubiquitous than anything else, especially on the internet. I believe pornography, there's more pornography on the internet than anything else. And the fact that we have allowed this to happen means that we as a people, as a society, we are all guilty of the largest case of mass child abuse in the history of mankind. And it's gotten to the point where we don't even know what bathrooms to tell the youngsters to use anymore. Let's go to reason number 1052 to get or keep your children out of the government schools. The U.S. Supreme Court has blocked a lower court ruling that would have allowed a tranny to use the high school bathroom that he said fit his gender identity. But you say, Doug, this is good. The Supreme Court has ruled to prevent a transgendered boy to use the bathroom that fits his gender identity. Why is this reason number 1052? Well, the fact that this even is a topic for discussion at a high school is reason number 1052. If the administrators and the staff at the school think that there is some legitimate question about what bathrooms boys and girls should be using, well, you want to get your kid out of there, okay? That's number one. But let's get deeper into this court ruling, because I think it's diabolical. And not that these godless, heathen, child-molesting judges on the Supreme Court have to actively conspire to put together a diabolical plan. It's just that they're evil. And they do it by second nature. It's not a conspiracy. This is just who these people are. Every single one of them, by the way, on the court. Every single one of them. Without, they have no excuse. In this particular case, Justice Stephen Breyer signaled he did not support the school board's emergency appeal, but he said he joined the court's four conservatives as a courtesy. You see, the school filed an appeal after a lower court ruled that a tranny could use the bathroom. So a lower court ruled that the tranny could use the bathroom, so the school board filed a lawsuit, filed an appeal, and saying that we don't want the tranny to use the bathroom, although we're willing to discuss it. We don't want the tranny to use the bathroom because that's not the law. So Stephen Breyer sided with the conservatives to block the lower court ruling that would have allowed the tranny, but he says he did it as a courtesy to put the issue on hold until the justices can review the matter when they return in the fall. So what Stephen Breyer has done here is he is setting up another case similar to Roe v. Wade or the Obergefell decision the Obergefell opinion that homosexuals could be married. So Stephen Breyer wants to make sure that we codify by law, and the Supreme Court is, not that we codify by law, but that the Supreme Court is allowed to make the ruling that makes transgenders, trannies in the bathroom, the law of the land. Stephen Breyer doesn't want there to be any question, because now that we've given the Supreme Court the authority to speak from on high, and we have to follow their every opinion, he wants to make sure that when this opinion comes down, it has the full effect of Roe, it has the full effect of Obergefell. He's going to make sure that every school district in the country complies. So the issue began, according, this is from the LA Times, the issue began last year when the U.S. Department of Education lawyer advised school districts nationwide that Title IX protects the rights of trannies to use any bathroom they want. And so the problem with the school boards and the churches and the pastors and the parents is that they're all willing to go to court for a few years while their kids are mentally, spiritually, and often physically molested. No. Get your kids out. Don't allow your kid to... Anyway, can I say it any more succinctly? I'm not going to participate in a legal wrangling for several years over a question that, frankly, could be answered in one sentence. And then if you disagreed, I would just slap you in the face and say you're crazy. You should probably be institutionalized. Trannies in the bathroom, please. Now, from the personhood file, do we have time before the break? We have time. The personhood file, despite the fact that no credible scientific theory, this is from Breitbart, by the way, despite the fact that no credible scientific theory has refuted the reality that all human life begins at conception, the scientific community has not reported abortion as a cause of death in the country's vital statistics system. So researchers are now asserting in their study published in the Open Journal of Preventive Medicine that ramifications of this failure to report abortion as a cause of death are significant for public policy, since mortality along with fertility and migration is among the major determinants of the size and composition of any nation. The exclusion of any major cause of death from the vital statistics system, especially one with large racial and ethnic disparities, should be a major concern to the scientific community and the public as a whole. Therefore, we, the researchers publishing this study, considered abortion as a cause of death in order to, one, assess its magnitude against other major causes of death, two, to assess its contribution to years of potential life lost, and three, to compare its relative impact on these outcomes for the three major racial and ethnic groups, Hispanics, blacks, and whites. Well, for Hispanics and non-Hispanic blacks, deaths from abortion are 4.2 to 3.5 times the number of deaths from all diseases of the heart and malignant neoplasms combined. Did you get that? There's four times more people being killed by abortion than are dying of heart disease. And this has been masked because long ago, The Supreme Court issued an opinion that we all had the ability to keep all this private and secret. And so we end up with a syndrome that's killing four times as many people as diseases of the heart and all malignant neoplasms. That's heart disease and cancer. And it's all going on in the shadows. And we think that it's all been kept quiet and it's all been private and that there is no public consequence. But go out into the streets and feel it, America, because the tension is building. There is going to be a consequence. No matter what the Supreme Court said, and no matter how you thought you could keep all this secret and in the darkness, there is going to be a consequence. And it will be shouted from the rooftops. I'm Doug McBurney, and we're back. We go to Israel, where a new video has appeared online. I got this from WorldNet Daily. A video has appeared online that shows a Palestinian father shoving his four-year-old son toward Israeli Border Patrol members and encouraging them to shoot the child. I will post a link to the video. It's chilling. This is a father pushing his tiny boy in front of armed men, encouraging them, go ahead, shoot him. Because the Palestinian father wants to make a political statement, is willing to sacrifice his child to do it. Benjamin Netanyahu, the prime minister, has commented that this has shaken him to the core of his being. Netanyahu said, quote, every father and mother around the world, I ask you to join me in calling for this end to the abuse of children. Indeed, Mr. Netanyahu. Indeed. I would stand with you, Mr. Netanyahu, were you not such a blood-soaked hypocrite. Because you, Mr. Netanyahu, have encouraged the murder of thousands of Israeli and Palestinian children as you allow them to be murdered in abortuaries, legally. And you wonder why there's no respect for the life of a child, Mr. Netanyahu. You say this shakes you to the core, yet you administer the murder of thousands of children every year, legally. You sign off on them, Mr. Netanyahu. He says, if parents don't respect their own children's lives, how will they respect the lives of their neighbors? And Mr. Netanyahu, that is a prophetic statement, because you and the whole world, the political leadership and the religious leadership of the whole world has administered a disrespect for the lives of people's own children, because you've legalized the murder of those children. You've participated in it. You've administered the governmental machinations that facilitate the murder of children by their parents. And now, how will they respect the lives of their neighbors? They will not, Mr. Netanyahu, and that's why this will lead to more war, more violence, and more bloodshed. Yeah, they thought they could keep it all secret, and that we could have parents butchering their own children. And that we could just do that and there would be no consequence. Well, there's a consequence. There's a consequence. And of course, they live it in Israel. It's coming here, the chaos and the violence. It's coming. It's coming. So the blood cries out from the ground. The innocent blood cries out from the ground to the living God. And his wrath will not be stayed indefinitely. All right. So now I want to switch to politics for the only story that I really found of import this week. And that's the fact that the President of the United States sent $400 million in cash to the Iranians in the middle of the night in order to free our hostages. It's unbelievable that he has gotten away with this. It's frankly, the fact that he hasn't been arrested proves that we no longer have any law in this country. There is no law any longer. Of course, I should have known that when the government defends doctors who tear the arms and legs off babies, shred them, chop out their body parts and sell them. I should have known that we were lawless when the police and the sheriffs actually defend those institutions against people who would go in and stop it. I should have known. When the president and the governor and the sheriff and the chief of police stand on that side of the line and point their guns out toward the people who would come in and stop it, that's when we became lawless. That's when all was lost. And now we can have a president ship $400 million in cash in the middle of the night and pay and basically fund a terroristic Islamic state. And then do a news conference about it and walk away as if nothing happened and get on a plane for Martha's Vineyard. It's shocking. Anyway, Pastor Saeed Abedini, who had languished in prison, said that on the day he was released, they were expected to be at the airport for approximately 20 minutes, but it took hours and hours. Abedini said, we slept at the airport. And the thing was, the Iranians were waiting for the money. And Barry had to patch that together with Swiss francs and gold bullion because he had to pay it in cash. And so there we have that. And then we have Hillary Clinton. According to a report in the Washington Examiner, Hillary Clinton recklessly discussed in emails hosted on her private server, an Iranian nuclear scientist who was giving secrets to America. So in her emails, she discussed Shahram Amiri, who gave information to the United States government about Iran's nuclear program. Iran confirmed on Sunday that Amiri has been hanged for treason. So here is a spy mentioned in Hillary's emails that were not secure, who is actually dead. What difference does it make at this point? He's already dead. So, because we have decided that we can tolerate lawlessness when it comes to parents who want to murder their own children, and we want to facilitate that for them, in fact, we'll keep it private. We'll make sure that there are laws passed on just how to do it. And then we'll keep it all secret. It'll be a cash business. We won't keep any record of it. Now that lawlessness has percolated and bubbled up and festered for 40 or 50 years now. To where our leading, most visible public figures can commit treasonous acts in public and then run for even higher political office. That's where this has brought us. Naked lawlessness in the highest reaches of political power in the country. And none of us should be surprised. And we should all be working daily to try to stop it. We should all be praying that God would raise up a governor or a sheriff or a president or a chief of police who would just stop and say, you know, the lawlessness is going to stop right here and it's going to stop right now. Put a padlock on an abortion mill and surround it with armed guards to stop the killing. That would be the first step on the road to clearing our conscience so that we could recognize that the president and the secretary of state are actually traitors and murderers. Because I think our collective vision has been clouded by the lawlessness and the sin that we've allowed to be tolerated publicly and legally. And when your vision is clouded because your conscience is not clear, you end up letting criminals get away with crimes because deep down you know you're guilty. And it's really hard for you to judge another person when you know that you're guilty as well. And so America needs her collective conscience purged. And I pray daily that God will raise up a man who will begin the process. What else do I have? I actually have a number of stories left that I didn't get to. Clinton Cash, I haven't watched it. I find it redundant. Anyone who doesn't realize that Hillary Clinton has been laundering money through her and Bill's foundation, well, to me it's just redundant. Yes, she's made millions. She's lawless. But, you know, maybe that's the reason that people can sit and watch and why a panel of idiots talking about political theories and rumors gains such high ratings is because it gives people the ability to not think about the real crimes that are happening out there. The murders, the bloodshed. And they don't want to think about that. Nobody wants to feel guilty about all that. So let's sit and watch six college morons talk about the latest poll and what it might mean and all of that. Maybe that explains it. Because it's certainly not edifying to sit helplessly by and watch your civilization die in a murder-suicide. So instead they choose to entertain themselves with empty pablum on the nightly cable shows and the talk shows and the radio talk shows and the internet. And I don't want to avoid those conversations. And I'm willing to state equivocally what is occurring and what is the solution. This broadcast will not end in the form of a question. So that's the show. I've got to go. No, not I've got to go. No, I've got to go. But should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. Until then, I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com and at AmericanRightToLife.com. And, of course, my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen. Here in the Weekly Worldview Studio, should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.